Chapter 9. Fortunatest young dog trotter that ever coming out of Connaught. And with that I give the flipper a big squeeze, and a big squeeze it was, by the powers that her ladyship give it to me back. But it would ha split the seven sides of you with the laughing who beheld, just then all at once, the consated behavior of Mounseer Mater D.I. Dons. The likes o' sich a jabbering, and a smirking, and a parley wooing as he beginned with her ladyship, never was known before upon earth. And divil may burn me, if it wasn't me own very two peepers, that caught him tipping her the wink out of one eye. Och, hon! If it wasn't Missile Finn that was mad as a Kilkenny cat, I should like to be told who it was. Let me inform you, Mounseer Mater D.I. Dons, said I, as perlite as ivory ye seed, that it's not the gentle thing at all, and not for the likes o' you anyhow, to be after the ogling, and a goggling at her ladyship in that fashion, and just with that such another squeeze as it was I give it her flipper, all as much as to say, isn't it Sir Patrick now, my jewel, that'll be able to the producting o' you, my darling? And then there cometh another squeeze back, all by way of the answer. Tea through for you, Sir Patrick, it said as plain as ever a squeeze said in the world, through for you, Sir Patrick, Mavourneen, and it's a proper nate gentleman ye are that's God's truth, and with that she opened her two beautiful peepers till I believed they would ha cometh out of her head elfagither and interly, and she looked first as mad as a cat at Mounseer Frog, and thin as smiling as all out o' doors at myself. Thin, says he, the William, och hon. And a woolly woo, pully woo, and then wid, that he shoved up his two shoulders till the divil the bit of his head was to be discovered, and then he let down the two corners of his purty trap, and thin not a haperth more of the satisfaction, could I get out o' the spalpeen. Believe me, my jewel, it was Sir Patrick that was unreasonable mad thin, and the more by token, that the Frenchman kept and with his winking at the witty, and the witty she kept and with the squeezing of my flipper, as much as to say, at him again, Sir Patrick O'Grandison, Mavourneen. So I just ripped out with a big oath, and says I, ye little spalpeny frog of a bog-throtting son of a bloody noun. And just then what do you think it was that her ladyship did? Troth she jumped up from the sofy, as if she was bit, and made off through the door, while I turned my head round after her, in a complete bewilderment and botheration, and followed her with me two peepers. You perk of I had a reason of my own for knowing that she couldn't get down the stairs elfagither and interly, for I knew very well that I had hold of her hand. For the divil the bit had I ever let it go. And says I, isn't it the least little bit of a mistake in the world that ye have been after the making, yer ladyship? Come back now, that's a darlin', and I'll give ye your flipper. But aft she went down the stairs like a shot, and thin I turned round to the little French furriner. Och hon! If it wasn't his spalpeny little paw that I had hold of in my own, why thin it wasn't, that's all. And maybe it wasn't myself that just died then outright with the laughing, to behold the little chap when he found out that it wasn't the witty at all that he had hold of all the time, but only Sir Patrick O'Grandison. The old divil himself never beheld such a long face as he pet an. As for Sir Patrick O'Grandison, baronet, it wasn't for the likes of his reverence to be after the minding of a trifle of a mistake. He may just say, though, for it's God's truth, that afore I left hold of the flipper of the spalpeen, which was not till after her ladyship's footman had kicked us both down the stairs, I give it such a nate little broth of a squeeze as made it all up into raspberry jam. Wowly woo, says he, pully woo, says he, ah tam. And that's just the truth of the raisin, why he wears his left hand in a sling. --- End of text --- Bon bon. Quan dun bon vin mubel mon estomac. Jesus plus savin K Balzac plus sage K Pibrac. Mon brass soul facin Ladic de la nation Cossack. La metroid o sac. De charon G passerois lalac. Endorman dan sun back. Jiri so fire eek. Sans came on seer fit tick and I tack. PR center do tabac. French vaudeville, that Pierre Bonbon was a restaurateur of uncommon qualifications. No man who, during the reign of, frequented the little CF in the cul-de-sac Lefebvre Drouin, will, I imagine, feel himself at liberty to dispute that Pierre Bonbon was, in an equal degree, skilled in the philosophy of that period is, I presume, still more especially undeniable. His pas de la foi were beyond doubt immaculate. But what pen can do justice to his essay sur la nature, his thoughts sur l'âme, his observations sur l'esprit? If his omelets, if his fricandeau were inestimable, what literateur of that day would not have given twice as much for an idée de Bonbon as for all the trash of idée of all the rest of the savants? Bonbon had ransacked libraries which no other man had ransacked, had more than any other would have entertained a notion of reading, had understood more than any other would have conceived the possibility of understanding. And although, while he flourished, there were not wanting some authors at Drouin to assert had his dicta evinced neither the purity of the Academy, nor the depth of the Lyceum, although, mark me, his doctrines were by no means very generally comprehended, still it did not follow that they were difficult of comprehension. It was, I think, on account of their self-evidency that many persons were led to consider them abstruse. It is to Bonbon, but let this go no farther, it is to Bonbon that Kant himself is mainly indebted for his metaphysics. The former was indeed not a Platonist, nor strictly speaking an Aristotelian, nor did he, like the modern Leibniz, waste those precious hours which might be employed in the invention of a fricassee, or, facile gradu, the analysis of a sensation, in frivolous attempts at reconciling the obstinate oils and waters of ethical discussion. Not at all. Bonbon was Ionic, Bonbon was equally Italic. He reasoned priori, he reasoned also posteriori. His ideas were innate or otherwise. He believed in George of Trebizond, he believed in Bessarion, Bessarion. Bonbon was emphatically a Bonbonist. I have spoken of the philosopher in his capacity of restaurateur. I would not, however, have any friend of mine imagine that, in fulfilling his hereditary duties in that line, our hero wanted a proper estimation of their dignity and importance. Far from it. It was impossible to say in which branch of his profession he took the greater pride. In his opinion, the powers of the intellect held intimate connection with the capabilities of the stomach. I am not sure, indeed, that he greatly disagreed with the Chinese, who held that the soul lies in the abdomen. The Greeks at all events were right, he thought, who employed the same words for the mind and the diaphragm. *1. By this, I do not mean to insinuate a charge of gluttony, or indeed any other serious charge to the prejudice of the metaphysician. If Pierre Bonbon had his failings, and what great man has not a thousand, if Pierre Bonbon, I say, had his failings, they were failings of very little importance, faults indeed which, in other tempers, have often been looked upon rather in the light of virtues. As regards one of these foibles, I should not even have mentioned it in this history, but for the remarkable prominency, the extreme alto relievo in which it jutted out from the plane of his general disposition. He could never let slip an opportunity of making a bargain. *1, MD, L, not that he was avaricious, no. It was by no means necessary to the satisfaction of the philosopher that the bargain should be to his own proper advantage. Provided a trade could be effected, a trade of any kind, upon any terms, or under any circumstances, a triumphant smile was seen for many days thereafter to enlighten his countenance, and a knowing wink of the eye to give evidence of his sagacity. At any epoch, it would not be very wonderful if a humor so peculiar as the one I have just mentioned should elicit attention and remark. At the epoch of our narrative, had this peculiarity not attracted observation, there would have been room for wonder indeed. It was soon reported that, upon all occasions of the kind, The smile of Bon Bon was wont to differ widely from the downright grin with which he would laugh at his own jokes, or welcome an acquaintance. Hints were thrown out of an exciting nature, stories were told of perilous bargains made in a hurry and repented of at leisure, and instances were adduced of unaccountable capacities, vague longings, and unnatural inclinations implanted by the author of all evil for wise purposes of his own. The philosopher had other weaknesses, but they are scarcely worthy our serious examination. For example, there are few men of extraordinary profundity who are found wanting in an inclination for the bottle. Whether this inclination be an exciting cause, or rather a valid proof of such profundity, it is a nice thing to say. Bon Bon, as far as I can learn, did not think the subject adapted to minute investigation. Nor do one. Yet in the indulgence of a propensity so truly classical, it is not to be supposed that the restaurateur would lose sight of that intuitive discrimination which was wont to characterize, at one and the same time, his essays and his omelets. In his seclusions the Vindobergen had its allotted hour, and there were appropriate moments for the Comtesse du Rhone. With him Sauterne was to Medoc what Catullus was to Homer. He would sport with a syllogism in sipping St. Perry, but unravel an argument over closed avowgiate, and upset a theory in a torrent of Chamberton. Well had it been if the same quick sense of propriety had attended him in the peddling propensity to which I have formerly alluded, but this was by no means the case. Indeed, to say the truth, that trait of mind in the philosophic Bon Bon did begin at length to assume a character of strange intensity and mysticism, and appear deeply tinctured with the diablerie of his favorite German studies. To enter the little café in the cul-de-sac Lefebvre was, at the period of our tale, to enter the sanctum of a man of genius. Bon Bon was a man of genius. There was not a Sauskusenier in Rouen who could not have told you that Bon Bon was a man of genius. His very cat knew it, and forbore to whisk her tail in the presence of the man of genius. His large water dog was acquainted with the fact, and upon the approach of his master, betrayed his sense of inferiority by a sanctity of deportment, a debasement of the ears, and a dropping of the lower jaw not altogether unworthy of a dog. It is, however, true that much of this habitual respect might have been attributed to the personal appearance of the metaphysician. A distinguished exterior will, I am constrained to say, have its way even with a beast, and I am willing to allow much in the outward man of the restaurateur calculated to impress the imagination of the quadruped. There is a peculiar majesty about the atmosphere of the little grate, if I may be permitted so equivocal an expression, which mere physical bulk alone will be found at all times inefficient in creating. If, however, Bon Bon was barely 3 feet in height, and if his head was diminutively small, still it was impossible to behold the rotundity of his stomach without a sense of magnificence nearly bordering upon the sublime. In its size both dogs and men must have seen a type of his acquirements, in its immensity a fitting habitation for his immortal soul. I might here, if it so pleased me, dilate upon the matter of habiliment, and other mere circumstances of the external metaphysician. I might hint that the hair of our hero was worn short, combed smoothly over his forehead, and surmounted by a conical-shaped white flannel cap and tassels, that his pea-green jerkin was not after the fashion of those worn by the common class of restaurateurs at that day, that the sleeves were something fuller than the reigning costume permitted, that the cuffs were turned up, not as usual in that barbarous period, with cloth of the same quality and color as the garment, but faced in a more fanciful manner with the particular velvet of Genoa, that his slippers were of a bright purple, curiously filigreed, and might have been manufactured in Japan, but for the exquisite pointing of the toes, and the brilliant tints of the binding and embroidery, that his breeches were of the yellow satin-like material called aimable, that his sky-blue cloak, resembling in form a dressing wrapper, and richly bested it all over with crimson devices, floated cavalierly upon his shoulders like a mist of the morning, and the distout ensemble gave rise to the remarkable words of Benvenuta, the improvisatrice of Florence, that it was difficult to say whether Pierre Bonbon was indeed a bird of paradise, or rather a very paradise of perfection. I might, I say, expatiate upon all these points if I pleased, but I forbear. Merely personal details may be left to historical novelists. They are beneath the moral dignity of matter of fact. I have said that, oh, enter the café in the cul-de-sac Lefebvre was to enter the sanctum of a man of genius, but then it was only the man of genius who could duly estimate the merits of the sanctum. A sign, consisting of a vast folio, swung before the entrance. On one side of the volume was painted a bottle, on the reverse a pate. On the back were visible in large letters Evers de Bonbon. Thus was delicately shadowed forth the twofold occupation of the proprietor. Upon stepping over the threshold, the whole interior of the building presented itself to view. A long, low-pitched room, of antique construction, was indeed all the accommodation afforded by the café. In the corner of the apartment stood the bed of the metaphysician. An army of curtains, together with a canopy à la grecque, gave it an air at once classic and comfortable. In the corner diagonally opposite, appeared, in direct family communion, the properties of the kitchen and the bibliotheque. A dish of polemics stood peacefully upon the dresser. Here lay an ovenful of the latest ethics, there a kettle of Dudissimo melanges. Volumes of German morality were hand and glove with the gridiron. A toasting fork might be discovered by the side of Eusebius Plato reclined at his ease in the frying pan, and contemporary manuscripts were filed away upon the spit. In other respects, the Café de Bonbon might be said to differ little from the usual restaurants of the period. A fireplace yawned opposite the door. On the right of the fireplace, an open cupboard displayed a formidable array of labeled bottles. It was here, about 12 o'clock one night during the severe winter, the comments of his neighbors upon his singular propensity, that Pierre Bonbon, I say, having turned them all out of his house, locked the door upon them with an oath, and betook himself in no very pacific mood to the comforts of a leather-bottomed armchair, and a fire of blazing faggots. It was one of those terrific nights which are only met with once or twice during a century. It snowed fiercely, and the house tottered to its center with the floods of wind that, rushing through the crannies in the wall, and pouring impetuously down the chimney, shook awfully the curtains of the philosopher's bed, and disorganized the economy of his pate pans and papers. The huge folio sign that swung without, exposed to the fury of the tempest, creaked ominously, and gave out a moaning sound from its stanchions of solid oak. It was in no placid temper, I say, that the metaphysician drew up his chair to its customary station by the hearth. Many circumstances of a perplexing nature had occurred during the day, to disturb the serenity of his meditations. In attempting d'essayer la princesse, he had unfortunately perpetrated an omelette à la reine. The discovery of a principle in ethics had been frustrated by the overturning of a stew. And last, not least, he had been thwarted in one of those admirable bargains which he at all times took such a special delight in bringing to a successful termination. But in the chafing of his mind at these unaccountable vicissitudes, there did not fail to be mingled some degree of that nervous anxiety which the fury of a boisterous night is so well calculated to produce. Whistling to his more immediate vicinity the large black water dog we have spoken of before, and settling himself uneasily in his chair, he could not help casting a wary and unquiet eye toward those distant recesses of the apartment whose inexorable shadows, not even the red firelight itself could more than partially succeed in overcoming. Having completed a scrutiny whose exact purpose was perhaps unintelligible to himself, he drew close to his seat a small table covered with books and papers, and soon became absorbed in the task of retouching a voluminous manuscript, intended for publication on the morrow. He had been thus occupied for some minutes, when I'm in no hurry, Monsieur Bon Bon, suddenly whispered a whining voice in the apartment. He devil, ejaculated our hero, starting to his feet, overturning the table at his side, and staring around him in astonishment. Very true, calmly replied the voice. Very true. What is very true? How came you here? Vociferated the metaphysician, as his eye fell upon something which lay stretched at full length upon the bed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.